This is Word of Mouth from New Hampshire Public Radio. I'm Virginia Prescott. Coming up today, Havesies, a project to feed the hungry by cutting down on America's oversized portions. And a dog-loving journalist peers into the pampering, consuming, scandalous, and charming show dog circuit. We'll hear his insights and ideas on what to watch for when Westminster kicks off next week. First, we'll pick up on that trail with new tricks from old dogs. Writer and atavist editor Evan Ratliff looked into the science behind breed development of the most diverse animal on the planet, the beloved dog. He did the article for National Geographic. By combining and accentuating traits, breeders have leapfrogged evolution, developing hundreds of breeds in just a few hundred years. Evan Ratliff joins us now with more on the findings of CanMap. That's a project that's revealed the genetic makeup of canine traits and which may help scientists better understand human diseases and disorders. Evan, thanks for joining us.
Oh, it's great to be here.
So what's behind this breeding of dogs through the ages?
Well, as far as we can tell, the domestication of dogs happened, you know, started maybe 20,000, 15,000 years ago. They're actually not quite sure, but the way it took place started with wolves sort of approaching human settlements and becoming comfortable around humans, and it gradually transitioned at some point to humans taking an active role in the process. And what these researchers have been looking at are the sort of genetic underpinnings of what that process created. So dogs are now the most diverse mammal on the planet, and you can tell if you go out to any dog park in any city, the incredible diversity of dog breeds that exist. And the question they were addressing was, you know, what does that mean for dog genes? What are the genes underneath that actually are able to create that diversity?
So you report on this just explosion of canine genomic research that has helped science better understand how breeding has been possible. And I should mention that there are terrific photographs of several of the breeds by Robert Clark accompanying your article. So who or what is behind this research into canine genomes?
Well, some researchers got together. They're from Cornell, they're from Stanford, UCLA, and from the NIH. And they started this project where they essentially gathered the DNA of hundreds and hundreds of dogs, 900 dogs initially, 80 different breeds, also wolves, and they sort of put them in a database and started comparing them and started looking at, okay, if these dogs have X trait in common, what kind of genes do they have in common? And this was something that, you know, there's been dog research over the years, but no one had taken this sort of genetic approach to it, and partly it was enabled by technology, and partly it was just these researchers saying, okay, they're man's best friend, and you know, they're our pets, but also they may have insights into human disease and human genetics that could be very valuable. And what they found was that dogs have this sort of very simple genetic architecture that determines their physical traits, and it actually is very valuable for understanding ourselves as well.
So there's a handful of gene combinations in dogs. In fact, you point out the difference between a Dachshund and a Rottweiler hangs on a sequence of a single gene. How does this compare, Evan, to human genetic sequencing?
Well, this is what was most astounding in their research, which was the fact that such a small handful of genes could determine a trait, particularly physical traits. So dog size is determined, 50% of it is determined by one gene. So if you know the value of this particular gene region, you can tell the size of the dog. And if you add a couple of genes onto that, you can get to 80 and 90%. Now, in humans, there are hundreds of genes that determine human height. So even if you know the value of different gene regions in humans, you can't necessarily predict how tall that person would be. But in dogs, it's really the opposite. If you can find these few gene regions that determine the values, you know what the size of the dog will be. So it's sort of, you flip a few switches and you go from, as you say, one type of dog to another, even radically different looking dog. Mm.
We're talking with Evan Ratliff about an explosion of genetic research on dogs. And the findings show how dog breeding has kind of fast-forwarded evolution by creating hundreds of diverse breeds in just the past few centuries. Evan did write about the mixing and morphing of dogs for National Geographic magazine. Well, because it was in National Geographic, there are some fantastic color codes showing the influence of traits on breeds. Let's go through just some of them. The scientists broke down the breeds into some broad categories. What are they?
Well, they use the physical traits and the genes underneath to sort of outline four broad categories. One is the sort of wolf-like dogs. They're also called kind of primitive breeds like the Chow Chow and the Basenji. And then you have the herders, and most people are familiar with those, you know, Belgian sheepdogs and that sort of thing, collies. Then you have hunters, which are hounds and terriers and spaniels. And then finally, they're the mastiff-like dogs, which, you know, have this particular physical makeup that's kind of built on the, you know, the mastiff and the bulldog. And they believe that they might have been bred as military dogs originally.
And all of these dogs, they're bred, I guess, for their dominant traits. And those are the things that get carried on. Have I got that right?
Yeah, it's what happens is it's sort of the opposite of what happens in the wild. In the wild, evolution selects for generally small, very small changes, and those kind of evolve over time. I mean, that's the nature of sort of natural selection and evolution. But with artificial selection, with breeders saying, I want a dog that has a certain type of snout or a certain type of body size, they're really going for genes with a bigger impact. And that's why we've ended up with these small number of genes with a large impact, because those are the ones that breeders were always selecting for.
With the genetic pool being from such few genes, are there any adverse effects on this highly designed breeding?
There are, of course, genetic diseases in dogs. I mean, they have many of the genetic diseases that we have, actually, we share with dogs, but they have ones that are particular to them because of inbreeding, and particularly because a lot of the populations of different breeds were started from a very small number of dogs. So just, you know, a handful of dogs are responsible for an entire breed. So it's called a bottleneck in genetics. So it's taking a small gene pool and creating diversity out of it, and that can create genetic diseases. But I should say that, having talked to a lot of breeders, I mean, breeders today are very familiar with genetic diseases, and they're very careful to you know, breed to avoid them. Mm-hmm. It generally happens outside of the kind of professional breeding area where you start running into problems.
And you did speak with a NIH researcher, Elaine Ostrander. Now, what is NIH? What's the interest there in mapping canine genetics?
Well, partly just the NIH is just interested in science. So, you know, at some base level, you know, scientific discovery can have all kinds of impacts that you can't anticipate. But in particular with dogs, you know, dogs share our environment, and they have for 15,000 years. So dogs are actually a great model to study the same diseases that we get, because they have the same environmental influences. And now that we're understanding their genetics, we can look into their genetics and try to find the genetic sources of the same diseases we have. So they might have, you know, epilepsy is a disease that we have that dachshunds also have a version of. And you can look at the genes in the dachshund and try to determine targets for treatments in humans.
Evan, we have to wrap up, but you did write another article about research being done on so-called village dogs. These are, you know, the kind of semi-wild dogs that are eking out their existence on the fringes of human settlements. So what's the goal of that research?
Well, those are the most populous dogs on the planet, the ones that are sort of scavenging around villages all over the world. And that's a researcher named Adam Boyko, who's at Cornell. And what he's trying to understand is, you know, the history of how dogs became domesticated. And what they've discovered is those dogs are genetically as closely related to wolves as they are to our dogs today. So they're kind of a midpoint in the evolution of dogs over time. And it's a way to understand, you know, dogs' origins, and also to understand how we ended up with the breeds we have today.
Evan, I really want to thank you for joining us today.
That was my pleasure.
Evan Ratliff is editor of The Atavist. He also writes for Wired Magazine and other publications, and is the author of Safe, The Race to Protect Ourselves in a Newly Dangerous World. And you'll find a link to more on his Mix Match Morph, How to Build a Dog, including a behind-the-scenes video of William Wegman shooting the cover for the National Geographic, where the article appeared. That's at wordofmouthradio.org. Later in the show, we're going to be talking with writer Josh Dean. He's going to take us behind the grooming stands at Westminster. So do stay with us for that. And a program that aims to help the hungry by getting restaurants to serve less. All that after Shakespeare Behind Bars in just a few minutes, when Word of Mouth continues.